You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Duarte Geraldino, Deputy Managing Business Editor for Al Jazeera Digital. Tanzina Vega is on maternity leave. You've been wondering how she's doing during the coronavirus pandemic and how she's feeling as a new mom. So later this hour, we're going to check in with Tanzina. But we start today by talking about the news media's responsibility at this moment. You expect news outlets to give accurate information during the health crisis. And according to a recent Pew Research Center poll, 70% of Americans think the news media is doing, quote, very or, quote, somewhat well in covering COVID-19. But one of the biggest dilemmas facing news outlets is how to cover President Trump's press briefings and how to do so while at the same time combating misinformation and reporting on the severity of the pandemic that has us all hunkering down and working from home. I myself am in my living room right now, talking to you with my kids in the next room. Now, you've heard the president's briefings played live on news outlets across the country. And if you've avoided them, let me catch you up. President Trump initially downplayed the threat of the novel coronavirus and went on to make numerous misleading, unverifiable, just plain false statements about the outbreak. Here's a quick sample.
Because of all we've done, the risk to the American people remains very low. Nobody knew there'd be a pandemic. Going to be pretty soon at only 5 people. There is a very low incidence of death.
What do you say to Americans who are watching you right now who are scared?
I say that you're a terrible reporter. Chinese virus on our nation's students. We're going to be able to make that drug available almost immediately.
Romney's in isolation?
Yes.
Gee, that's too bad.
I'd like him to go back to the State Department, or as they call it, the Deep State Department.
Does he agree with you about the need to reopen the economy soon?
Well, he doesn't not agree. It's going to disappear. One day it's like a miracle. It will disappear.
To be clear, we've heard from medical experts that the vaccine is not right around the corner and that the death rate is going to keep rising. The president has also been combative with the press.
What do you make of that?
Well, I just think it's a nasty question.
For now, most television and radio news outlets are choosing to air these briefings without any major interruptions, and I want to stress that those outlets are making a choice. Now, I have two guests who are going to help us better understand President Trump's press briefings and how they fit into media coverage of the coronavirus outbreak as a whole. Margaret Sullivan is a media columnist at The Washington Post. Great to have you here, Margaret.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
And Adam Serwer is a staff writer for The Atlantic. Thanks for coming back on the show, Adam.
Thank you for having me.
So, Margaret, 3 times last week, President Trump said that the anti-malaria drug chloroquine might cure coronavirus. But then, a man in Arizona died on Sunday after drinking the chemical and giving some to his wife, who's still in critical condition. What does his death illustrate to you?
Well, I was just reading about that, and it was interesting that the news outlet who interviewed the wife, who's still alive, said, you know, what message would you put out there for people? And she said, don't believe what you're hearing in these press briefings and talk to your doctor. In other words, you know, go with the science, not the sort of fable or mythology here that's being put out there. It is interesting that they took a form of this drug that, as I understand it, that isn't even the kind of thing that would be prescribed for dealing with COVID-19. It was, you know, kind of a variation of it that wasn't appropriate at all, obviously. I think that the misinformation that's being put out there is potentially dangerous, and that's an illustration, a very vivid and very sad illustration of just that.
Margaret, you published a piece over the weekend that argues media outlets should stop airing President Trump's coronavirus press briefings live. Why would you do something like that during a time when everyone's desperate for information? How did you reach that conclusion?
Well, I didn't reach it lightly, because my impulse as a lifelong journalist, an editor and now a writer, is that in the middle of a terrible crisis, when the president of the United States has something to say to the nation, you should, in fact, put it out there live at every opportunity. But what's happened here is that he's doing these press briefings frequently, and that they've turned into almost a substitute for the political rallies that he had been having. So they're very long, they're rambling, they're full of misinformation, they are sometimes xenophobic, you know, the Chinese virus, as he puts it, they're to some extent dangerous. And I think that I'm not suggesting that we don't report on them or that we don't use clips from them, but just to sort of blast them out there live is actually not consistent with the core purpose of good journalism, which is to seek and amplify the truth. You know, once you put the information out there, it's very difficult to sort of put the genie back in the bottle. Fact-checking afterwards is a good idea, but it doesn't accomplish the full purpose. And it's very difficult to fact-check in real time. I mean, you'd have to do some sort of a split screen and have, you know, the equivalent of CNN's Daniel Dale, who's a genius at fact-checking, you know, constantly sort of dealing with things as they come up. I just think that's unwieldy and it wouldn't be very successful.
Adam, do you agree that airing these briefings live is a problem, or is it how it's being broadcast?
Well, so I think the issue is that most Americans do not watch these conferences live. I think the larger issue is that they consume them through newspaper write-ups and local news clips where the falsehoods and erratic behavior and rambling by the president are downplayed as producers and editors try to hammer Trump's statements into something that can be digested as information. So there's an impulse, even when the president is not saying something that makes sense, to make it make sense somehow, to write around it or to edit around it. So the average American watching this on the news or reading the newspaper gets a very sanitized version of what actually happens at these events where the president spreads falsehoods about the disease and what the government is doing to deal with it. And I think in some ways that's the larger issue. You can, you know, even if you don't air these things on cable news, the way that most people consume them, they're sort of already getting an inaccurate picture because of the conventions of objective journalism in the United States, which sort of say that you have to do your best to make this make sense, even if it doesn't actually make sense.
So are you suggesting that they're normalizing it?
I mean, I think that word has been overused a little bit in the Trump era, but what I mean is not that they're normalizing it. They are trying to inform their readers by making what the president says make sense. And the final product is one in which the erratic, rambling, and false nature of the president's statements is not really accurately conveyed to the audiences and readers.
So if this is more of a structural problem, what's the most effective way to cover the president's press briefings? So you're saying we should do them live or we should not?
I think that it doesn't solve the problem either way, whether you air them live on cable news, which most people don't watch, or how you cover them later. I think the larger issue is honestly how these events are covered in local news and in newspapers, and not necessarily, you know, what, you know, 1 or 2 million people are watching on cable news every day. That said, I don't disagree with Margaret that what the president is doing in these press conferences is essentially contradicting the words of his own public health officials in an effort to revive his political fortunes.
Margaret, what's your take on Adam's perspective on this?
Well, I certainly agree with him that part of the problem, a big part of it, is the coverage of President Trump. And this has been true all along, not just with this issue. It's just that it's gotten much more dangerous now. But I also think that it's a broader, that the subject of taking his briefings live is broader than just the cable networks, because the broadcast networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, radio stations, public radio, and other news organizations, including large newspapers, websites, have also been taking them live. So it is actually a broader audience than just cable TV.
Adam, there's a tendency among some cable news pundits to praise the president when he delivers messages with a slightly more measured tone. Have you noticed this happening in recent weeks?
I mean, yes. It sort of happens every time that the president does a good job of playing President of the United States on TV. He acts sort of for maybe 5 or 10 minutes like a normal president, and then he sort of earns praise for doing the public performance of presidenting well. And I just think, you know, every single time he does it, he can only sustain it for a brief period of time, and then he reverts to form. And it's sort of, the reason that this keeps happening is that when so much of what the president is doing cannot be framed in a positive way, you know, objective journalists, and that includes cable news hosts, are sort of, they sort of feel an impulse to bend over backwards to praise the president when he does actually do something well. The problem is that it's not that he's doing something well, it's that he's doing the minimum, and for some reason that prompts a kind of praise that, in my belief, is not earned.
Does this praise take us on a slippery slope?
I don't think it puts us on a slippery slope because the president's approval rating is already buoyed by a sort of cult of personality that has emerged around him and that is sustained by conservative media and by the Republican Party. So I think we're already there. I think what it does is it legitimizes treatment, that sort of fawning treatment of President Trump for an audience that isn't inclined to view him that way already naturally.
If we can look at some of the conservative news outlets, you know, Fox always comes to mind. Initially, it appeared like they were downplaying concerns about the virus that had already taken such a hold. Now, have they changed their perspective on it?
You know, the coronavirus crisis has been very revealing in terms of conservative media's priorities. For an example, conservatives like Newt Gingrich have argued that it's the mainstream media's fault that conservatives didn't take the pandemic seriously initially. But the New York Times and the Washington Post didn't force Fox News to spread misinformation about the virus for weeks. They did that because Trump was downplaying the threat of the virus, and Fox News's role is not to inform the audience, not even about issues of life and death, but to make sure that that audience sees Trump as infallible at all costs. Now they went from downplaying the threat of the virus to praising Trump for his heroic efforts to stop the virus to arguing that the economy needs to be restarted again, even if it kills lots of people. And I think what I said earlier about the cult of personality that is surrounding Trump that is sustained by conservative media and the Republican Party, it's now actively dangerous in a way that, you know, was not directly clear, I think, even a year ago.
Margaret, do you get the sense that outlets like Fox will keep reporting on the virus in the way that would be considered unbiased, or might that change?
Well, I agree with Adam about the role that Fox plays, and it's really not in general, you know, there are exceptions, but in general, Fox News is not about informing the public. It's about sustaining and building up the Trump administration and Donald Trump to an audience that wants to hear it. It's part of this whole system of keeping a sort of a mythology around President Trump. So sometimes, you know, Fox News will tend to say, well, it's our opinion people who, you know, in the primetime hours, who have their opinions, but our reporting is very straight. That actually doesn't hold up well under scrutiny. So I think that Adam's description of it, downplaying it, then treating it seriously, and now pivoting to this idea just in the past day, and this is a sort of a feedback loop between Fox and President Trump, that the economy needs to be restarted soon and that human lives may have to take a back seat to that.
The both of you have criticized pretty heavily the media, but when it comes to the major news outlets and how they're covering COVID-19, is there anything that the journalists are doing particularly a good job of?
I think so. I mean, I think that most of the major news outlets are portraying the truth to Americans, and in some ways very, very effectively. You know, we may have been, in some cases, a little bit slow off the mark, but I think that in general, you know, through informational graphics, through reporting, through human stories, I think that the message is getting out there from the traditional national media and local media.
Yeah, I want to say something about that, if I could. I think that the media has actually done an extraordinary job covering the coronavirus. When you're talking about foreign correspondents or science reporters or health reporters, these people have been performing an extraordinary public service for the American people. Where it becomes different is when you're talking about political reporters. And that's because the conventions of political reporting are really not up to covering this administration. And every other type of reporter, every other type of reporting desk is going to be focused mainly on telling you the facts. But political reporting in the United States is largely about narrative. They're trying to convey to you the political narrative that is occurring. And as a result of that, viewers and readers are not really going to get facts as they get them from other kinds of reporters who cover health or who cover foreign policy. They're going to get a narrative that is shaped to fit a particular storyline. And that's just an asymmetry in the traditions of American politics that has just made it very difficult to cover this administration accurately.
Margaret, you've written about how local media outlets across the country are struggling right now. Has COVID-19 and the need for good local news coverage made the decline of those outlets even more apparent?
Yes, it's made it even more apparent, and it's actually about to, or already has started to, exaggerate and exacerbate the problems that these local organizations are having, whether it's a local newspaper or a local investigative website. They're all losing their revenue because of the economic impact of the coronavirus. Now, please don't interpret that to mean that I think that we need to start the economy back up or something like that. But it's undeniable that the revenue, particularly advertising revenue, that they've relied on is going away. And we're seeing an immediate effect in alternative weekly newspapers in communities across the country that are folding. And we're going to see a lot more of it, a lot more newspapers that are already troubled, having a very difficult time sustaining their existence.
I'd like you both to chime in on this question. So what do you think are the biggest lessons that journalists should keep in mind when they are covering the coronavirus in the weeks and months ahead, but also more critically, what should average folks who are listening, reading, or watching that coverage be thinking? How should they be filtering all that coverage? Margaret?
I think that news consumers, or as I like to idealistically call them, citizens, should be consuming a wide variety of news from different organizations. They should be comparing and contrasting to try to make sure that they're getting at the truth. They should be very aware that there is false news out there that's circulating. And I think most of all, they should be listening to the scientific and medical experts whose opinions and the facts that they're presenting are available, and to actually seek those out as vigorously as possible.
Adam?
I think the important thing to do when people are reading the news is to really prioritize the advice and expertise of public health experts over the arguments of politicians regarding public health and safety issues dealing with the coronavirus. I think we're in a very dangerous place when people are downplaying the threat of a deadly epidemic because they're concerned about making sure the president gets reelected. And that's something that I think is going to have a really terrible impact on Americans all over the country.
Margaret Sullivan is a media columnist at The Washington Post, and Adam Serwer is a staff writer at The Atlantic. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And by the way, we reached out to WNYC, the station that produces this show, and it said WNYC has not been airing President Trump's press conferences in their entirety, but broadcast portions of them with context and analysis as part of our regularly scheduled news programming from NPR.